This is Tuesday, the 24th of October, 1978, and we are having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Master.
Good morning.
The first question we would like to ask has to do with the mechanism.
Excuse me.
Oh, yes.
I feel that we should send this tape to our friends to the south, but making it clear that we would prefer that they not share it with their following, with their group there, until such time as the group is able to amass some dynamic questing in a relationship with me. I feel that our friends are very, very closely attuned to everything that we do, and I would not wish to in any way not continue to share the wisdom with them.
Okay.
Therefore, I would like so much to just have it sent, and just ask them to please understand that this is not some kind of a mystical device on my part, but I feel that their groups, several of the persons in their groups, are ready to enter into a dynamic, meaningful relationship with some aspect of the divine. Now, this is, of course, not true of all of their followers, but some of them. And I feel that they must now begin to reach out and to evaluate their own questioning. And in order to do this, I feel that we should just cease the tape sending, except to our dear friends, and ask them to make no exceptions. I'm asking you clearly in that, you'll have to take my word for it, friends, that I have this awareness to understand that there should be no exceptions made to that rule, no matter how much you feel. I realize that you've formed a special group that will be meeting to review tapes, and it is out of that group, perhaps, that our best questioning will come. You, as I understand it, are setting up a new group that will meet one of your evenings in order to discuss the tapes. It is out of that very class that perhaps we will get some of our deepest questioning from the South. And so perhaps they, on behalf of all of them, could begin the questioning. But I do feel that we should make no exceptions on this. And please trust me. If you question my judgment, I feel that's fine. Just let me know of this, and we will go into it. And of course, there's always that vehicle open to reciprocal questioning and understanding.
Okay, should we go back to this?
Please.
All right. How is it that the divine power is able to take over in one's life make practical decisions in the practical day-to-day world that one has to deal with, as well as on the other levels? What's the mechanism at work when this occurs?
Well, this goes back to a very basic question, which you have dealt with before, and which is the most difficult, in my understanding of things, the most difficult to explain of any of the questions that Earth people tend to ask. And it has to do, again, with free will, does it not?
Yes.
We're back to the same very difficult question. So, when one speaks in terms of surrendering one's life to a divine power, these are very easy words, and many people say them and know not what they mean at all, and are content with some kind of mediocre, shallow surrender. And I would not deprecate that at all, because that is a certain measure of release. But what we are talking about, and I think what the woman, this was the woman's question, was it not?
Yes.
This is her deepest understanding. As she moves closer and closer into understanding, and the closer into the source, the pulsating center of the source, she is coming to realize what it means when they say to lay it all down. All down. Now, I don't need to tell you that most people stop short of that goal. And the greatest ones have done it all the way through to the end, laid it all down. Mm. meaning not only were they at one stage able to surrender their lifestyle and put their hands, their lives in the hands of the powers of God. You know, that is one thing that's implied by that. But the other thing that is so difficult to do is that every single thought that you think can be, and in the case of the Christos, was surrendered to the divine power. I am making that statement. Now, does that, do you understand that? That that is what I really mean. That there is a time in each one's evolutionary spiritual journey when the time comes when you begin to say, as we have already discussed, you begin to say, I don't like the results of my own thought system. I don't like the results of my ego's exclusive me first, always me attitude, mm-hmm. you see. Now, when you say that, then you begin to qualify it. You know, at the beginning stages, all aspirants qualify that. They say, well, now, that only means that during the times of my meditation, I will turn over my thoughts to the divine power, you know, and they will surrender their meditation period for that time. And that is the first step. But then they will soon observe, if they're paying attention, that that isn't really enough, that the power generated from a mediocre meditation really doesn't have a whole lot of effect on their life. You know, perhaps some changes, but not a great deal. So then the question arises again at another cycle of their understanding. Well, perhaps more of my daily round should be surrendered to the divine.
Mm-hmm.
Then they will begin, usually, if there are people active in the world, they will begin to seriously move into such things as either moment-by-moment awareness or mantra or some kind of a device, granted a tricky device, but nevertheless an effectual device, of keeping their mind centered at that time on the divine, which is another way of saying, I will pick to think about God, or the divine, rather than thinking about my future, or my problem, or my wife, or my husband, or my child, or my enemies, or my job, or whatever.
I can see that at this point one's beginning to wonder, well, how does one decide to go to the grocery store or to go to work or
yes.
whatever?
You see, the key word here is about God. All right? When I say to you, most people think about God and consider that a holy state, I say that is a mediocre state. And that what is really necessary is to think with God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a whole other thing. Now, I am going to assume that most of you know what thinking about God means. That involves the whole separation of God and self, of two entities, God posited as outside or inside, either one, and yourself as something separate. This is a different understanding.
Right.
And it is extremely important that this aspect be taken into consideration and worked with. Because I have never yet observed on the earth plane in this incarnative cycle of all of those here that are here now, I have not observed in any of you the ability to keep continually centered in the thoughts of the divine as with God rather than about God. All right? So I'm merely saying that I don't think that any of you should overstate your own abilities here, that you should be careful, that you put yourself where you belong very carefully and not just assume that you can overstep this important middle ground. Have I made that clear? Do you understand that? That there are some people who will listen to this and say, oh, I know, but I'm past that. I'm past that middle stage of thinking about the divine. And I say, no, you're not. You know, that no one listening to this tape is so grounded in the divine power that they can pass by the effective use of this device. And so I say to you, all of you, pick your way and go with it, because you will find in this intermediate stage that during times of the day it will be important when you realize that you have flown off and you're completely grounded in the material.
Yeah.
And you're totally uninvolved with the divine at all. And you remember and you're not able to move into this deeper understanding, which is what we will deal with next, then I say use this middle area in whatever way. If you're into mantram, use the mantram. Use moment by moment awareness. Use the practice of the presence of God. I don't care what you have to do, but use it. And I'm speaking about as you move around your job or your house or you're driving your car or so on. These are moments to be used. Every moment of your life used at maximum for the divine is what we're seeking. And this is a goal that most of you fall very short of. Very short of. You have too many other things that occupy your mind. And no blame. I'm not saying anything is wrong with that. I'm simply saying that this is one of the things that your program of your walk to understanding falls down on, because you don't use all of the moments available. You will watch the television, you will read the books, you will deflect the power, you know, and move it into other areas, and that's fine. Some of you are not able to sustain longer than a short period of time, but do what you can, is what I would say. But then let us go back to that premise that there comes a time when you realize that thinking about God is different from thinking with God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is where you will really begin to get into the depths of your being, if you are paying attention. Because thinking with God means literally that. By that I mean that there is, in the higher mind, we have discussed that this is an inadequate word for you, people who really don't believe in this kind of thing, but I have to use this kind of wording. There is, within the higher mind, access to the great, vast movements of understanding that are available to you to the extent that you can move into and hold your place in that higher mind. All right?
Okay.
Now, the major problem here, as we've discussed, is getting enough movement behind to keep you in that higher mind. You know, there's a lot of fluctuating in and out, in and out, in and out. And this is what most people do during meditation. They move into the higher mind and then they come back out again. And that's fine. But what we're seeking for is a way of life that will ensure maximum amount of time spent in the realm of the higher mind. Now, what do all those big words mean in the practical sense? In the practical sense, one has to learn to continually be aware that you are making a mental thought choice. Each moment of your daily round, you are making a choice between two modes of thought. The one mode of thought is thinking about God, and the other is thinking with God. Now, how can you tell the difference? Well, it's very simple, really. If you feel yourself doing the thinking, the thought process, if you say to yourself, I have a problem before me, now let me go through my mind and select out of that, out of the vast choices, the one that is going to match up best with this situation, and hope that it's holy and related to God, and then on your past experiential material, go and follow through with it, then you're still in the realm of thought, of the lower mind, and it's very much related to what I would call your ego responses, because it's usually based on other people's opinion from books, opinion from your own experience, pressures of your environment that really want you to pick a certain way, your own desires which want you to pick a certain answer. All right, now that's different. But there is a way of knowing that you are performing in the realm of right action because you were in the realm of right thought. Right thought comes first. Right action comes after right thought. Now, right thought simply means practicing and practicing and practicing the releasing and the coming out of the little mind and trusting and laying in and being surrounded with the wisdom of the higher mind. And you say to me, well, that sounds very difficult. And I say, no, it's not difficult. It's a matter of turning over moment by moment. It's a surrender in a moment by moment situation and beginning to trust it. Because, you know, most of the problem here is trust, sir. Most of the people do not believe that there is a power that will pick them up when they lay down their ego. They don't believe it. They think there's going to be a vast emptiness, a hollow, resounding tub of nothing that they're going to sit in and scream and yell and nothing is going to happen. I mean, this is the kind of image that comes into a human's mind when we deal in terms of not thinking your way through a problem or not thinking your way through life. You say, it can't be done. I have to think before I can decide whether I'm going to do A, B, or C. I have to think. And I say, no, you don't have to think. You can. That's one way of working with it. But there is another way. And the other way is the difficult way, because it means, in your terminology, it means relearning, if I may put it in those terms. It means relearning, learning again. Learning again a way that has been extremely helpful to you in the past, but it was so far in your karmic past that you can't really recall it. Which means that there was a time that you were able to perform right action because creative wisdom was moving through you and you were aware of it. Creative wisdom is moving through of you now, and you are not aware of it. This is simply the difference. So, of course, all of this is just a little gimmick to get you to become aware of the deep truth that is moving through you right now, that embodies all of your answers. And you say to me, well, how do I do that? How do I do that practically in my day? In my day. And I say that if you watch, you will see that more and more and more, if you want this kind of attunement, if you want this kind of dynamic life and right action, then you will find that each day you will consciously make an effort more and more and more each day to watch your moments and make your choice between the machinations of the mind, which you will easily be able to tell what's happening, and that going within and waiting for a response and then trusting that response and going on with it. And as more and more you trust that response, even in the mundane things, it will work. Now, I can easily see the picture of someone like, let's say, in the nursing profession. She will say to me, Bartholomew, I can't risk that. I can't risk making a decision on how to treat a patient. You know, what if I'm wrong? What if my mind has been geared to understanding of how to deal with medicine? Mm-hmm. And so how then can you ask me to do this? And I say, I would never dream of asking you to begin the process in the realm of medicine. But through the months of working it on your other areas of your life that are not so intensely dedicated to right response, you see what I'm saying? You don't begin in the greatest trouble area. You don't begin in the area where the greatest so-called loss could come about in a nurse's situation, in her nursing, in your situation, sir, in your job, right, in the woman's situation, in her job. You don't begin in those areas because you don't trust it. You see, and the whole point is, as soon as you really begin to trust the process, then you will move it into all areas of your life because you know it will work. But now you don't believe. Now there is a non-belief, you see. You say, oh, that's a dream, and I will wait until I have renounced my worldly life, and I no longer need to make critical decisions, and then I will use it. And I say, then you'll never use it. No one listening to this tape will ever get into the realm of using this device if you are going to wait for the optimum circumstances. Never.
Right.
There is no such thing. And your ego will make very, very sure of the fact that you are never liberated from your work state. You've got it wrong. All of you who are listening to this tape who want a lot of leisure time in order to pursue the path, I give you fair warning. It will not work. You're doing it in the wrong way. The way is to do it in the midst of your work, in the midst of your busy life, and believe me, when the sincere call goes out that you really need more peace, more quiet, more time, it will be given unto you, and there's no power on earth that would stop it, because the power of the divine will be moving. Mm-hmm. But you have done it you're doing it in the wrong way. Your ego says, oh no, we can't do this time, we can't do it this way, we'll have to wait until we have done X, Y, and Z, and then we will do this. And I say, then you never will. That is the most wonderfully effective device that the ego could conjure up in the lives of busy people, which is, I can't afford it, I don't have time. Of course you have time, it's simply you choose not to do it. And let's be very honest, it's not a matter of not having time. If you look at your life, you will see hour upon hour upon hour of useful time that is spent in unuseful ways. And that's fine. No blame. I'm simply saying one of the problems is that you allow the ego to believe for you a lie, which is that you don't have the time. What is true is you don't have the desire, and that's quite a different thing. So back to the statement. No, you don't jump into using this to trying to get the power of this faculty behind it in your most critical areas. You start using it at home in right. relationships. You start using it in the quiet time of your work situation when there are no definite decisions that have to be made. Did you see?
Yes.
You begin there, and you get into the habit of referring, of saying no. In the Buddhist tradition, it's the not this, the not this, the nette-nette situation. Not this, not this. Meaning, not the way it has come down to be translated, perhaps, but a deeper understanding of that nette-nette would be, no, not the mind. No, not the old thought patterns. No. And instead of conjuring up new thought patterns, one begins to really develop calling on the space within to answer the question. And I assure you that the power is capable of answering and moving into all situations. And there will come a day of one truly, truly surrendered where you will find this very interesting phenomena. There is a working to be done in your life, a minute details of paperwork and decision making and data gathering and so forth. And in the midst of this very thing, you will see clearly that there is, it will become a chore for you to have to answer the small, minute little questions that come along. You will so yearn to be with that divine power of communing with the power within that you will begin to have impatience with answering the mundane little questions. Do you see?
Yes.
There will come into your life this phenomenon. And when this starts to happen, know that you are on the verge of great changes in your life. And how they go will depend entirely on the person, his karmic background, his future responsibility in the karmic realm, not realizing that it is not a matter of how many children you have around you or how big your responsibilities. God works in any situation, and you don't have to, you know, wait until your children are grown up and gone away from home before you can begin this kind of thing. That's nonsense. Everyone has their excuses. You know, and the person who works in the world is just as filled with problems as the person who has children. You know, it's no different.
Right.
And each one, as the call goes out, if your call is sincere, the response will come that will free up the need for some of this more detailed, minute data gathering and so on that can be a real chore. Mm. So you're saying to me that means that the vast mind cannot deal with this little minutia. And I say, oh, it can by all means. But when those of you who are really dedicated begin to get that deeply into the service of the one God, what happens is we have other work for you.
Uh-huh.
It's simply a matter of we have other work for people who are that attuned and that dedicated. There's other things that have to be done. And you move out of your more minute frames of reference and you move into vaster ones. And you would not, for example, a nurse would probably not find herself in a situation like nursing. And you would say, but it would seem to me that would be the very PowerPoint at which God could best serve. And I would say, no, I'm sorry, that is a misperception. It's the same as your work in the penitentiary, sir.
How is that?
Because the nature of the organizations that you are aligned with, penitentiary hospitals, have a very clear-cut way of operating, and it is based on an assumption other than the divine power, and they would probably sense and resent the changes that you were making, and they would probably move you out.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't a matter of the divine not being able to work there. It's a matter of, it's a very, we have to deal in the realm of power on the earth plane. And I'm speaking a lot here about the nursing profession because I sense that there might be a nurse coming into all of your lives soon who would be able to understand this. So this is why this particular interest. There are many corollaries between the nursing profession and your profession of penitentiary work. And the one thing that must never be underestimated in dealing in these areas is that people who are ill are working in the realm of misunderstanding. They're working in misunderstanding. And people who work in nursing and doctor professions and believe in the power of health through illness and overcoming illness are working in the realm of misunderstanding. They do not understand God and the divine, otherwise they would not believe in illness and they would be able to do much more powerful things. The same thing is true in the penitentiary situation. People in those areas believe in the power of evil, believe in isolating it and in an isolated way of treatment. Both are true, you see. We believe that the disease is something that should be isolated and taken care of, and this means we don't understand the dynamic of why the person got ill in the first place. If we did, we wouldn't respond in this way. And as we've talked about before, sir, the same thing is true about so-called evil in the penitentiary sense of evil.
Right.
And we always respond by isolating these people. And this only means that we don't understand at all of what we're doing. You see, and on the earth plane, this need to isolate is a fear response on our part and a lack of understanding of how to deal with it and so on. And understand that in both of these areas there is so much misunderstanding that that someone who is carrying and bearer of the light and goes in there has an almost hopeless job, and to be very frank with you, oftentimes can be much better used in other areas. Now, there are always exceptions, and so I would never make a vast statement that all nurses who are striving toward the light should leave their jobs. I'm not answering that, nor should all people in penitentiary work do the same. I'm simply saying that do not be surprised if you find yourself making a real thrust toward intuitive responding to the divine power, finding yourselves out of such jobs. That's all I would say, and I think that you will both understand what my thrust is. So I would say, of course, the divine can deal with minutia, but also that the divine deals best in sweeping away a lot of the need for minutia and develops a different kind of response to all of life and all of every moment situation. And this is what is usually available to the true seeker who has gone through all of the preparation periods that I've discussed and who is really ready now for the complete turnover, which is the next stage, which is what we will deal with. Now we're speaking of the need to really turn over everything. And you say to me, do you mean everything? And I say, I mean everything. I mean every aspect, every thought of your life turned over. And then you participate in what we've talked about before, which is that the divine power seems to carry you up and take you on, and you no longer feel that you are having to make the effort toward it, that it has taken over the power, and you move along with it. Have I made this clear?
Yes, that's the last stage, I would guess.
That is the beginning of the real understanding, and I know this is unfortunate to say this way, because people say, oh dear, I'm so far. But actually, all of this can be achieved in an instant. These are not things that have to be achieved over... Since time and space are not actual concepts, they're simply illusory constructions that have been to make it possible for you to work in this egotistical plane. There's no deep validity to them. Realize that time does not hold you bound at all. And anything that can be done in an instant. It doesn't have to take weeks and months. But unfortunately, most human beings believe so incredibly deeply in the power of time and space that they tend to set things up so that they must happen in a continuing, unfolding, long-term basis. Some of our biggest obstacles come in very devout people who say, oh, I can't, I'm sure that God is working on me in a slow process, and it will take time. It's taken time to build it, and it will take time to destroy it. So that's why, in most cases, it does.
I see.
But actually, the fact is that all of this could be done in an instant. I mean, the veils could drop in an instant, and perception of the real could happen in an instant for any of you.
How is that possible?
Well, what happens...
I'm one of those in the grip of that illusion. I think it's going to take lots of time.
Well, then it probably will. And please understand, there's no blame attached to this. In most people's lives, it does. And it, because you were conditioned to think in terms of things taking time, processes take time, and all of the mental constructions in your mind, all of the belief modes in your mind are built on that, that things take time, you see. But the thing that doesn't take time is God doesn't take time. God didn't make time, and God doesn't work in time. He works outside of time. And when things happen and are miraculous, for example, a healing that takes place, is a miraculous event, is it not? And the reason that it's miraculous is what? It has transcended the time element of your belief structure. Someone is sitting there in a church praying, or someone is praying on their behalf for healing, and instantly it is done. Instantly.
Right.
And one says, it is a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. Well, I would say to you, no, it's not a miracle. It is simply one of the ways in which the divine power is manifesting in order to teach you something. But most people don't understand the message. The message is, this is not a miracle. This is the natural. This is the natural way of things. This is the natural order of things. God acts always the same. And when God is really moving dynamically in a situation, the results are instantaneous. The problem is that he cannot violate, due to free will, he cannot violate the mental construction in your mind. And because he would put you in a tremendous state of fear. Realize that the reason that so many so-called miracles of healing take place over a long period of time is not because God wills it that way, but because the mental construction of the individual is such that it must be done that way. Otherwise, they would be placed in such a fear circumstance that all of the good would be undone by the terror.
I see.
The terror of knowing that God moves instantly can be extremely helpful to people who have a benevolent and loving God. But realize the terror of that. Do you see the opposite of that? The person who underneath it all and has not yet come into contact with the tremendous fear that exists within most human beings of God, this would work in the exact opposite. If you knew by your own experience that God moves instantly and can heal, then in your mind, on one level, is also the deep truth of he can move instantly and perhaps destroy you. You are not yet aware of the fact that God is not destruction. You are not aware of that. That God's movement in your life is joy, is love, is extension and creation. It is not destruction and death and evil. But you don't know this. And books like the Old Testament do nothing to encourage you to believe it. You know, they just make you believe in a very capricious, destructful God who makes pacts with the devils. And all of that, by the way, is utter nonsense.
What do you mean, pacts with the devil?
Going into the whole book of Job, as far as we're concerned, is a real travesty on truth.
Uh-huh.
And I won't go into it now, but it's that kind of understanding that makes life very difficult, to think that a God would put upon a child of his, if you would like to think of it in those terms,
yeah. And
destroy the lives of those around him in order to benefit a wager made with the forces of darkness, which is, as we understand it, your translation of that event,
yeah. That
to prove that the power of God wins. This is incredible. This is incredible. Look who turns out to be the hero of that. The hero of that threesome ends up to be Job, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, all right, but what does it do to people's understanding of God? What kind of a God is it that would, out of caprice and out of a challenge thrown down by the powers of darkness, put a child through this kind of an experiment, no matter how it ended up? Do you see that it is so badly misunderstood? And I will go into it in another time, perhaps, but I just want you to know that it's this kind of background of misunderstanding of God that just makes things incredibly difficult. So I would say that the deep underlying truth here, which is that God only acts in love and support and peace and joy, is easily misunderstood and taken out of context. I feel that we're going to have an advent of a higher power here.
Very good.
I greet you.
Greetings, Master.
I have come at this time to speak what I hope will be an edifying few words on this subject. Beings on the earth plane are deeply caught in the illusory understanding that the actions that they perform day by day have some ultimate meaning, and the most difficult thing for them to understand is that the day-by-day movements of their lives are only helpful to the extent that they are beginning to use them as mirrors of ways to free themselves from bondage. One's life on the earth plane, one's action on the earth plane, is useless until one realizes that it is useless, that it moves in a never-ending cycle of despondency and misunderstanding and attack and selfishness. But once they are aware of the pulsating impetus of this cycle and ask the divine power to help them free themselves from these wraps of bondage, then the earth plane takes on an incredibly dynamic and meaningful reality. I have spoken to you about this before, and I would like to bring it to the truth again, which is that as you look upon every event in your life, if you could continually ask within your being the questing question of, if this is illusion, show me truth that lies embodied in this life that I am leading. Have it give up its truth to me. If this can be the constant attitude, not of your mind, but of your being, you will soon come to understand why freedom is possible. It is not the questing in your mind that will free you, but the questing and power building in your being that will move out into your daily round and thus free you. The way that this happens is simply to call upon the power within to begin to move dynamically in all aspects of your life. Now you live in compartmentalized worlds, and you have compartmentalized yourself in an effort to see yourself as separate entities. This has brought about the need to compartmentalize all of your life. You see yourself as a being in a body doing a menial chore at a desk, for example. This is not the truth of your reality. In reality, you are divine power moving through an experience that has no value as long as the divine power is not at work. I have stated before, the divine will in all events is what gives them their meaning. The divine will has given you the right to choose to live an isolated life in your own understanding of isolated reality. It is as if a child were playing a game and was believing that game. But this is your choice, and he would not stand in opposition to what you desire. His love for you is such that he would allow you to experience that which you choose to experience. when you awaken that this is a unimportant triviality, this vast drama on the earth plane, when it is finally seen to be an uneventful triviality in time-space, then one begins to say, is there the divine written within this experience? And it is at that time that the divine could be said to really be moving within that experience. As long as you wish to mirror your ego, then know that that is what you are seeing, is an ego mirror, and it has no meaning. When you choose to move out of that and choose to go beyond the appearance and to see only mirrored the divine, that is when it begins to manifest itself for you, and it then can manifest itself in all aspects of your daily routine. But understand this, it is only at this point that you could say you are living the life divine. Up until this time, you are living the life of the ego and are bound by the laws of that ego. That is, in effect, the karmic drama that you as a group of egos have chosen to play. These are your rules that you have set up, and you are playing them. Do not make the mistake of thinking it is God that made up the rules and that you are forced to play. When you finally decide to lay your life down and become involved in the drama of the divine, you will find that the rules are changing. I will not go into this because they are irrelevant to those of you who have not yet made this decision. But when you really decide to move in the realm of the divine, the rules change because there are divine rules that stand that will override any rule that the ego might temporarily have constructed for its own benefit. So things will change about you and within you that are beyond your wildest understanding. It will call on a degree of faith and truth to abandon the old structured thought system and belief system. And it is at this stage that we find that you need the intermediaries, which you would call the beings of light. It is at this stage when the avatars and this stage when the gurus and the teachers are most beneficial for you, because you will become very, very disoriented in your movement, and it is their support and trust that will carry you through over so-called the abyss into the realm of deep understanding. And it is this stage of understanding that most of you choose to withdraw and go back into the laws of the ego, because you cannot yet formulate the laws of the divine. And I say that it is at this stage that the disorientation is the greatest, and the greatest faith is needed, and the greatest dependence upon the divine power is needed. And I am here to say simply that you can believe in and trust that power. It can be trusted to carry you over the abyss, but you have to constantly surrender your thoughts and say, I am not working by the same rules, and I do not yet understand the new rules. Will you then act for me? And then in that stage, we have the phenomenon of the body being moved by a divine power, and there is a sense of duality. There is still the sense. Prior to this, there was the sense of ego, the one. Then now we're moving into the sense of the two, the ego and the divine power. And the end of that is the one. There is no ego. There is simply the divine power. Do you see what I'm saying? This is the sense in which the duality becomes the most difficult, when you sense mostly the movement of the ego and also the movement of the divine. Both seem to be so much there. Your illusory vision is still with you and has not fallen, so you sense the two wills, you sense the two lives, you sense the two powers. In reality, there is only one power and has always been only one power, but you are not yet freed from the movement, which is not power but is movement nevertheless, constantly revolving, unmoving, uncreating power. Power is really not the word. She's searching. momentum is the right. There's still, you're still caught in the momentum of the first egotistical movement. That has not lost its momentum because certain thought forms are still giving it some power, but it is, it could be seen as decreasing, ever decreasing in its momentum. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, around it, surrounding it, and imbuing it is the beginnings of attention to and awareness of this vast power. So this is what we are experiencing, is the two movements that seem to conjure up the idea of two wills, of two choices. There is in reality only one choice at this stage, but one must be very patient at this stage, patient with oneself and patience with the process, because in many cases it is true that this at this stage can be instantly done. It is also true that the thought formations of most people on the earth plane do not allow instantaneous release, and therefore you must accept this as part of the movement of the two wills again. Your thought form has not broken out of that. It has not yet opened itself up to knowing that this, that these old thought structures can safely be abandoned, because they have not yet felt the truth of the new, of the so-called, in their minds, the new movement of their life. They have not yet made the transition from one to the other, and it is in this gray area where such need is for the great avatars. And I suggest to you, unless your arrogance is so vast that you think you can make this walk of the bridge on your own, that you throw yourself utterly and completely on the love and wisdom of those that have traveled before you, and whose power is sufficient to help you be carried across the abyss to truth. It is here that the greatest arrogance can defeat you. When you say, I can do it alone, this is where so many of you who have seen clearly that there is another world of dynamic power and creativeness of the one God lose, because your ego structure is so strong that you continue to say, I can do it alone. To those of you who say that, I say, beware. There are few and far among you who can do it alone. And I would ask you to have clear understanding within yourself. Are you one of those that can do it alone? Or is it simply a leftover of the momentum of your tremendous ego power that has kept the wheel of your karmic patterns going for eons of time? Which is it? Take a look at this very deeply, because this is the point at which you must surrender that very essence of your ego self, which has always told you, I am sufficient unto the day. And I would give you some advice here for those of you who are open enough and humble enough to take it. You are not sufficient unto the day. You are not. Unless you can place yourself in the realm of the great avatars, you are not sufficient unto the day, because you have not built enough power within your being of the one manifest God in order to carry yourself with this power over the obstacles. Those of you who find that you believe in yourself to such an extent, I can only say there will come a time when you will be wise enough to throw yourself on the benevolent mercy of the divine power. And this is what the highest beings would call total surrender. When you abandon your thoughts and your actions totally to a life and a power that you have not yet firmly known to be real, is the leap of faith that is required of all of those who will make the one God their entire embodiment. Do you have questions?
Yes, I was wondering what will happen to those who, what type of thing happens to one who is at this crossroads where the divine is sensed, but uses this for egotistical purposes?
When one is moving into the realm of the divine, when one begins to call upon the power of the divine, and yet is deeply meshed in the egotistical cycle, what manifests on the earth plane is this is the greatest egos that you have seen, the greatest power figures move in this area. The greatest power figures on the earth plane have tremendous capabilities, or they never would have reached power. It is simply that it has been ultimately now used for the egotistical movements on this karmic pattern of life. And it is this movement that you oftentimes see in great giants in, for example, the financial world. They have incredible abilities, but yet, at the juncture when they had a choice of moving into the power of the divine and surrendering it all and having in their minds no definite rewards, when they could not give up that egotistical reward, which is what they wanted in the first place, we have manifest on the earth dynamic persons of power who are using it for their own benefit, either through the joy and the delight of the power itself, or through financial powers or wisdom or what have you.
I see. So this really is a critical juncture, because the ego senses the possible self-aggrandizement for the ego in using this the new power that's it's become aware of.
This is the point at which you would most see on the earth plane the dichotomy. The great minds, for example, the great scientific minds who come into the world have also had choices to make and have chosen to move along a purely intellectual basis, which ends them up in great reward of an intellectual kind, much of which has very little benefit to mankind. I was thinking now in terms of the great minds who developed the hydrogen bomb, the atomic bomb, and so on. There was a juncture at all of these minds when they had the opportunity of choice, of using that mind power to move into the realm of the divine. But in order to do so, they had to surrender the very thing that they cherished so much, which was the delight and the joy in their own individual created mind.
Yeah.
It is at this point that they are asked to surrender their individual mind and allow their own desires of what they wanted in their life to be surrendered and taken over by the power of the one God. And it is at this stage that they could not do so. And therefore, they have merged with a certain amount of power which they retain, and now they use in their own ways for what is ever important in their own manifest life. Many people fail at this stage. Many people are drawn into the wrong realm of power and choose to use it for their own intellectual or physical aggrandizement.
I see. Then it's at this stage that one should link up with a master.
It is at this stage when the hardest thing to do is to say, I know nothing, therefore I turn to someone who does. Because one of the objects, one of the things that is manifest in this incredible stage is that you can be greatly delusioned to thinking you do have power.
Yeah.
That you have power. When the power begins to enter a vehicle, unless they are greatly humbled and greatly surrendered and greatly aware of the divine within, it can easily be misunderstood as individual dynamic power. And the last thought that will cross its human mind is, I need someone to help me. Because at this stage, the power within is dynamically strong, and they sense deeply what might happen. And it is extremely difficult at this stage, and the great ones are very rare. And you would ask me, what makes this possible? And I say, only a long time of constant surrender to the divine will bring you to the right choice at this time. I will state, it is extremely unlikely at this stage of development, when power is beginning to move, that the great one, that the power figures will have really had much of a choice. It depends entirely on their background. It depends on what they have, the choices that they have made continually through the beginning of their life.
I see.
It is not something that will come into their lives all of a moment. It depends entirely on how much they have worked through their lifetime to understand the mechanism of the ego. So many great ones have come to this point and chosen other, because they wanted to carry on that tremendous sense of, look what I have accomplished.
Yeah.
Look at my deep and wondrous wisdom. But at that point, if you will watch these lives closely, the power begins to become befuddled. the power begins to move into other areas, and they have left the pinnacle of their life. And so many people look at these lives and state, oh, then the power of the human life comes in the middle lives. And this is not so. What is true is that the power builds, and when the choice is made other, and the ego has really caught on to this and manifest its own will, the ego then moves into, you have then moved back again into the momentum of the ego situation, and power declines. As such evil, so-called evil people as the Hitler era and so forth, this is all greatly manifest of what happened, of the decline. It was that then the pinnacle point of choice is other, and they have lost their opportunity.
Then in a case like Hitler's or any other case of where you have a man with great power, there is a juncture which it was hoped and perhaps even intended that they move toward the light and surrender so that they could really be a vehicle for light.
No power comes to a human by chance. The kinds of power that you have seen manifest, as in the Hitler situation, none of that power comes to people by chance. There is always with some ultimate hope of a workings out of a divine plan of understanding and openness. And oftentimes the greatest diabolical plans on the earth plane had the potential within them for the greatest light, but the vehicle proved inadequate.
Uh-huh.
And the memory of the greatness of the power remains. And there are so many examples in the world that one could give. But perhaps the greatest example in the spiritual plane would be a disciple of the God who started out to do great work and ended up doing very mediocre work, and that is Meher Baba. This is perhaps someone who you all are familiar with.
Yes.
That he stands as an example of one who was given incredible beginnings, but at the pinnacle, when the choice had to be made, he picked himself.
Uh-huh.
And this is his own power, his own, he saw himself as the world teacher, as the world master, and this is, of course, where he lost, and his power declined rapidly.
Uh-huh.
This happens oftentimes in great spiritual leaders, that there is a pinnacle point at which they have a choice to make, and if they pick themselves, then it ends in a slowly declining sense of inadequacy, and the world responds in kind because the power no longer is manifest. Understand that power can be lost as well as gained. What can be gained can be lost. What can be brought into understanding and used creatively can also be lost. I believe we should close this.
Very good. Thank you, Master.